What's up, everybody? Nate Lurie back with more of We're the Inspiration. With some dark humor and brutal honesty, we're exploring the absurdity and the normalcy of living with disabilities. Stories are told on this show. Everyone's is different. One by one, we're telling as many as we can while bringing you the most entertaining podcast about disabilities you'll ever hear. Turns out we get a lot of teachers to come on this show. And this week I have with me someone that has taught kindergarten to both special education students and mainstream students. And she's also married to one of my best friends, Emily Hayes. Thank you for being the inspiration for this week's show.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, how you doing?
I am good. Sweating it out down in North Carolina. How are you?
I think it was like 97 degrees today here.
Oh, gosh. It's too hot.
It's way too hot, and summer just started. So that's the scary part.
Yes, there's no such thing as global warming. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's a different podcast.
Yes.
Like I said, I get a lot of teachers that come on the show, and we talked before I started recording about how some of those are the ones that ultimately taught people like me wheelchair and basketball when I was a kid. But one thing I didn't ask them, and I've always wanted to know this, when it comes to like learning about how to teach, once you're done with the education process, how is it decided what you'll teach?
I was educated to be an educator in New York, and that is like a whole different ballgame there. You go to school, you need your master's. It's not really a choice. And then your dear best friend brought me down to North Carolina, where it is a completely different ballgame. Any person who has a teaching degree in any other state, when they come to North Carolina, it gets normed to whatever North Carolina's norm is. For whatever certificates that your teaching certifications from other states and degrees from other states and qualifications from other states, however that goes. And so when I came to North Carolina and I sent all my paperwork in to the Department of Education for North Carolina, they spit it back out with, I was qualified to do this laundry list of things. And I took that laundry list of things and I went to various county websites and saw what I was quote unquote qualified to do. Now, mind you, coming from New York, we start school the Thursday after Labor Day. So I thought I had a ton of time. We moved down here in July. Well, in North Carolina, there's something called year-round school. And year-round school starts the second week of July. I moved down the second week of July. So there weren't a whole ton of teaching jobs left for that school year. And so I was looking at all the qualifications I had according to the state of North Carolina, and there were a whole bunch of what they were called special education classrooms. And it was kind of mysterious of what these special education classrooms were, because they had a whole bunch of different letters. Like it was like a letter alphabet after the name type of deal. And being from New York, becoming a teacher, if you even got a job interview, it was really exciting. And so you just applied to everything. And that's exactly what I did in North Carolina. I applied to anything I was qualified to do. And I got 50 interviews because they saw that I was certified in New York and I had a master's degree and I was young and spunky and they just wanted me to come. So I did 50 interviews. I got 28 recommendations, which is the principal saying to their district, hey, I want you to offer her a contract. And I accepted one that when I looked on the map and I saw where we were living, this school was 10 minutes from my house. And I was really excited that it was so close. It was 10 minutes from my house. I really didn't have any idea kind of what I was getting into. When I was in grad school, I had worked with a variety of neurodiversities, a variety of physical abilities. I had learned to write IEPs. I had learned to make accommodations. And none of that, I would say, really prepared me for what I walked into when I walked into my first classroom. The first classroom that I taught in, which is the one that you were referencing, was called a low incidence special education preschool classroom. It was a 1-5-8. One lead teacher, 5 assistants, 8 students. All of my students that year were wheelchair bound, and the classroom was placed in just a good old elementary school. The county decided, hey, we have a whole bunch of kids in this part of the county that qualify under this area of eligibility. And so we're just going to put a classroom at this elementary school so they can all have equal travel times. This classroom had a bathroom that wasn't wheelchair accessible, wasn't changing table accessible. We literally had a good old 6-foot table with a large pad on top of it that we couldn't get the kids into. We had adapted toilets that we shoved in the bathroom and we would pull out of the bathroom when the kids needed to use it. When we had to have fire drills, we were just kind of like pulling wheelchairs all about. However, I say all of these things, and it was by far one of my favorite teaching jobs and one that I will never forget. And I will remember every single one of my students for the rest of my life. They impacted how I look at the world. They impacted how I look at my own 2 children. They impacted how I look at every other student that comes across my path, whether it is a student who comes into my general studies kindergarten classroom, whether it is a student who comes through one of my camps, whether it is an enrichment client of mine, it doesn't matter. My first 8 babies that I had that first year of teaching in that low incidence class shaped the way I will be a teacher forever and ever. Amen. They showed me that as long as you can have a sliver of joy in your life, it is going to be okay. The simplest things, the twinkle of a Christmas light, singing Old MacDonald, being able to hit a Switch toy, all of those things brought so much joy into their lives, which has helped shape so many other students in my life.
Going back to, I guess, the building itself, it sounds like they were trying to accommodate the disabled students and they really just didn't know how.
Correct. Back in grad school, I had this professor who literally told me, if a child, if a student of any age that can fall under the IDEA Act of free and appropriate public education should be allowed to have a general education opportunity and be around age-appropriate peers. So the classroom that I had, that I walked into that year, had been a classroom for 25 years. There had been 2 other teachers who had gone through that classroom. And both of those teachers, who were amazing, do not get me wrong, it was just a different time, a different place, a different view on everything. That classroom was its own entity. The doors stayed closed. The kids never went anywhere. They came in the back door. They went out the back door. All the rest of the school knew that there was this special ed preschool classroom at the end of the hallway. Sometimes there was crying. Sometimes there was an ambulance. That was it. And when I came in, I, you know, spunky first year teacher, super excited, was going to do it. And I opened the door and one of the assistants who had been there for 25 years was like, Miss Amy, we don't open that door. Those kids are going to roll right out of there. We don't want the rest of the kids to know that we have potties. And I go, why? These children have a life and they should be around other kids. Like, these were preschoolers. So the next year, the pre-Kers, many of them were headed off to kindergarten the next year. So they should be around other kindergartners, other kids who are around their same age. And within 6 months, I had the majority of my students. We had buddied up with a kindergarten classroom and we were going into their classroom and those kindergartners were coming into our classroom. And as we were coming more into the school community, we had gotten the PE teacher to like take a 30-minute of his planning time once a week and make some adapted PE for us. The music teacher came in and did some adapted music. And as I was reaching out to more of the school community, they were becoming more accommodating to our needs in the building. Pretty much anything we needed within the classroom, our school would have taken care of. We needed a smart board, we got a smart board. We needed a swing, we got a swing. We needed more tables, we got more tables. We needed more adaptive seating, we got more adaptive seating. Anything like within the classroom that wasn't breaking down walls or adding plumbing, we could do and would get done. And then it was, though, the rest of the school that needed help. And within 6 months, we had made a space in the classroom so that general study students who were just like regular good old kindergarten students who signed up for their neighborhood school were coming in. We were able to organize all of the medical needs of the students, all of their G-tubes and colostomy bags and all of that in a way that it was still super accessible for us, but didn't make it as intimidating for the door to stay open, because it can be intimidating for kids to walk by and see these IV poles and all of that.
Sure.
And so we made it look a little more friendly so that we could leave the door open so that people could come in and say, hey, and we could go out into the community of the school and kind of like walk around the school. The biggest piece I would say that I had to go to bat for, our playground was not fit for us, and I wasn't having it. Preschool services made this little playground off the classroom, which was great. It was a fenced in area, it had a shed, it had a structure. All of my kids in wheelchairs needed an adult to access this structure. Well, as an adult, it's really hard to slide down a slide that's like 1 foot in width because my tushy doesn't fit in that area. So how is my tushy plus a student's tushy in my lap supposed to fit down the slide? Like, it doesn't work. And safety first, like my number one job is to keep the students safe so that they can learn and have joy in their life. And so we were able to adapt the playground to really make our needs the norm, because that's what it is. We needed to make the needs of the students the norm. And my second year of teaching there, we had a student who was a runner, not a walker, a runner. And so then we had to readapt the playground for that. And don't get me wrong, I was full on bull in a china shop because I was young, I was spunky, I didn't have my own kids yet. And I saw what it could be. And I had this professor in the back of my head saying, every child deserves to have an education. Every child deserves to go on playground and play on the playground. Every child deserves this. Every child deserves that, because it is their natural right of being a student, that this is what they should get. And I don't know, people look at me like I'm crazy. Like, how do you do this? And I'm just like, because this is what I do. I don't take no for an answer. And as you know, like, I will do what I need to do to get it done, type of deal.
I learned that pretty quickly about you. I think that's why we get along so well. But we didn't meet in a way that you know, had to experience the fact that I was in a wheelchair right away, right? Because you kind of approached me online first.
Yeah, I stalked you. Like, it was my a little job. Bit. My husband was like, hey, I have two best friends. Here's my one best friend, Nate. Actually, he called you Nathan. I call you Nate, and it bothers him a lot.
Does it really?
Yeah. Oh my God. It bothers him so much that I call you Nate. I'm like, oh, I was texting with Nate today. And he's like, who? I'm like, you know, your best friend. And he's like, oh, Nathan. And I'm like, no, Nate. His name is Nate.
My oldest friends, him included, are really the only ones that ever, ever call me Nathan anymore.
Yeah, so I stalked you because I had to know who you were. I couldn't like marry into a relationship where I couldn't be friends with his best friends. So yeah, but mentioned it. And I was like, okay, that's fun.
That blew up too, because not only am I friends with you, I'm friends with your parents.
This is true. Colleen loves a good Nate chat.
I know that.
Loves a good Nate chat. She lives for it.
She texted me a few weeks ago. She's like, tell me more about your podcast.
Oh, Colleen, we just love her.
Yeah. And now that you're going to be on it, I'm going to have to send her that.
And then she's going to send it to everyone. And then it's going to be on Facebook. And then you're just going to be real big. And then you're going to need Ben to like produce this whole thing. And I'm going to have to take a shower the next time.
And I told you about the rabbit holes. It happens.
Yeah, I love a good rabbit hole.
It happens every time. But going back to what we were talking about, I love the fact that you seem to slowly integrate the disabled kids, or whatever word you want to use, with the non-disabled kids. It must have been a learning experience for especially the non-disabled kids. Like, it was a way, I imagine, for the disabled kids to feel more accepted, but it had to be a literal learning experience for the non-disabled kids who hadn't seen, for instance, people in wheelchairs before.
So I need to actually have you take even a further step back.
Okay.
It was a learning experience for those students' teachers.
That makes sense to me too, but go on.
When I went to them, we would, as teachers, you know, on Fridays, all teachers go out, go drinking, you know, kind of wish away our sorrows of the week. And I said to some of the seasoned kindergarten teachers who were right beside my classroom, I was like, hey, how would you feel about having some of your kids come into my classroom? Okay, it's this new teacher. She's got some crazy ideas. She's already painted a wall black in her classroom. Where are we going with this? And they like took this like big deep breath. And I like to call it the teacher pause of like, I'm looking like I'm actively thinking, like you're going to get an answer you want, but actually I'm going to shoot you down. So it took a few weeks of going out to drinks and like talking about this type of deal. And the teacher right next door to me, I will forever thank her in all of my everything. She said, I have a student who saw one of your students and is interested in learning more about. Would you mind coming into my classroom and teaching my students? And then there was like this long pause about your students and how awesome they are. It took me a few little bits to like think about it, but that long pause was, and me. Once I went in and I brought, like I made a book of my students because in addition to being in a wheelchair, I had a student with a trach. I had a kid who was on 24-hour feed. So the student had an IV pole attached to their wheelchair for their 24-hour feed. I had one kid who couldn't sit up straight, so always at a recline type of deal.
Yeah.
And so I wanted them to see the students before meeting the students, because I didn't want that meeting to be something that was going to be a negative experience, especially like when seizures are involved. You never know what's going to set off a seizure. So I wanted to really talk about it and kind of make the kids aware of what was happening. And there was a few conversations of that. It was a definite slow process, but I think that the biggest change, going back to your question, was one of my students was invited to one of the kindergartner's birthday parties. And the mom of the kindergartner sent me an email saying, so-and-so really wants to invite so-and-so to their birthday party. What do you think of this? Is this something that can happen? Will they understand it? And when I read the email, I cried because I was like, we have broken down a wall. We have made a brick road that is wheelchair accessible. So it's perfectly paved. It really warmed my heart. And then this was like right when e-invitations were a big thing. I got an email from this, my student's parent saying, so-and-so was invited to so-and-so's birthday party. Do you think my child can go? I then had to take a step back of, in addition to helping all of these physically typical, neurotypical kids and adults understand what's happening, mm-hmm. I also had to help the parents of my students understand what was happening and understand that my students were becoming part of the community, were becoming loved and valued members of the community, not just the classroom at the end of the hall with the door closed. I said I would go to the birthday party with them and help navigate the situation so that the parents could see how we supported interactions. And then these kids started having like monthly play dates. They'd go to a adapted park together where I live in North Carolina. I believe within every like 50-mile radius, there's at least one adapted park that has adapted swings and adapted slides and ramps instead of stairs and is wide enough for a wheelchair and aid of whatever type of aid you need. And it really made a difference. And they started doing this. And I believe that they still interact with each other today. And these kiddos are now in fifth or sixth grade, is pretty cool to hear and see.
That last statement right there sort of reminds me of, did Ben ever tell you his first impression of me?
No.
We met in summer camp before second grade. Ben's first impression of me at that point was like, I don't want to be in the same group as this wheelchair kid. Obviously, you know, he got past that. One day in high school, for some reason, I just asked him, how long did you feel that way? He goes, about a week.
We were meant to be. Look at
exactly. us. But I want to go back even further than that. Go back to before you started teaching and all that, because I feel like not only what you've been saying to me, but your interactions with me probably mean that you had some sort of education early in life about people with disabilities.
So what you might not know about my dear mother is that she was a pediatric nurse. And before she was a nurse in a pediatrician's office, she was a nurse in a psych ward. And so the stories that I heard from a very young age were, people are people, no matter who they are. And everyone has good sides and bad sides. Even the best people in the world have a bad side. And you have to take people for what they are. And you have to set a boundary of, if someone is crossing that boundary, you may have to push them away. But there was never a, don't talk to that person because they look, sound, feel, smell different. So that's kind of just where I was from a very young age. When I became old enough to go to school, like not daycare school, but like kindergarten, first grade, second grade, I had a severe reading disability. I hated reading. I would call books stupid. I would throw them. I would rip them. I would do whatever it took so I didn't have to read. I was in special education for that. And the group that I was in had students of varying abilities as well. And that was just it. Those were my friends. It is what it is. This is what I needed. This is what they needed. We all partied together and got to go to the reading teacher's room, have our 45 minutes a day and call it a day type of deal. And so I don't know if that shaped me, but I know that I have always been the person who, when there's someone standing by themselves, it like breaks my heart and I don't like it. And I feel uncomfortable for everyone in the room of, why isn't everyone going up and talking to that person? My dear sweet husband doesn't always necessarily love it.
That's love your reaction to it, you mean?
Or love the fact that I will go out of my way to help. Example, we got married. We needed to fly to North Carolina because I needed to go back and teach. And in the airport, there was someone who was deaf and they did not have someone on staff who could use sign language. I have very choppy, broken sign language, but I have enough to be dangerous that if I had to communicate. And so they're on the loudspeaker, they're asking for anyone. Like, it's kind of like someone's having a baby on a plane and they get on the loudspeaker and they're like, is there a doctor in the plane? Like, this is kind of what it was. Does anyone in the airport have any knowledge of American Sign Language? And I looked at Ben. I was like, should I go? He was like, it's up to you. We're going to be late for the plane. And then he's like, no, just go. And I was like, okay, let's go. And I'm like trying my best with the broken sign language I have to really help this person navigate how we can get on the phone with someone to help them. And that's just kind of the person who I've always been. I'm going to try my darndest to help. Hopefully I'm successful. If I'm not successful, I tried. If I'm not successful in what my abilities are, I am going to look in my cell phone and figure out who maybe has an inch more knowledge than I have that we can call to help. Networking is always my jam. If you have a skill that I don't have, I'm going to make sure I connect with you on Facebook, Instagram, random black cloud in the sky so that we can stay in connection type of deal. And that's just who I've always been.
I can believe it. Fast forwarding a little bit, there's a common complaint that I hear from the teachers that have been on this show as far as if they have any experience in teaching special ed classes, or even some of the parents have this same complaint that if classes are integrated mainstream with special ed or whatnot, a lot of the time the special ed kids don't really get the education that they deserve. As a teacher with that sort of experience, how do you compensate for that?
I would say that it is a more global problem, and that I feel deep down all the way to my toenails that every teacher should have to spend at least one of their student teaching placements in a self-contained special ed classroom. There is no textbook, there is no novel, there is no professor that can ever give you that experience of sitting in a classroom where a kid is having a seizure. There is never a professor who can tell you about a kid who is so mad at the world and flips a table. Nothing can prepare you for that. Nothing can prepare you to fight that urge for fight or flight in situations like that. As teachers, we always say we are going to put ourselves in front of our students if there is someone in the school with a gun. We've seen it in every single school shooting. And that is the same thing for students who have any varying abilities, that all teachers should be willing to do whatever it takes for those students to learn. And the only way they can learn to do that is by doing it. I'm teaching summer camp right now, and I have, it's called the inclusion program. It's like a nationally recognized program, whatever. No matter what session I teach, I always have half my students are in the inclusion program because the camp director knows, like, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to meet the needs of that student and help them, or that camper, and help them succeed. These camp counselors always say to me, and my teaching partners always say to me, well, why do you do it this way? Like, why do you make this accommodation? And I remind them that an accommodation for one student has so many benefits for all students. A scaffolded schedule, a visual schedule, a less cluttered classroom, less furniture in the classroom so it's easier to navigate, is more beneficial for all students. If it means that a wheelchair can get through my classroom because I have less furniture in there, great. Less furniture also means that a child who has sensory regulation issues and all they want to do is slam their body up against things, well, that means they're not hurting themselves on a whole bunch of furniture. They can, like, push their body up against the wall, which isn't going to move, and then they're going to fall. It also means that kids can navigate the classroom easier because you're not just, like, scooting furniture this way and that way all the time. Accommodations for one student benefit all. And I feel like that's a piece that in many schools of education isn't being taught, that doing a picture schedule is going to benefit every single child because symbols, recognizing symbols, so letters, numbers, and then putting those letters together to make words, is extremely overwhelming. And having a picture of a sink to wash your hands versus wash your hands, which is three words, is so much better. And when you think about it, if you have to adapt that picture of a sink from a real picture to, like, a board maker picture where it's just black and white to support that child who has visual impairments and can only see black, white, and yellow, you're just doing the same thing, and it's going to benefit all the kids because they see the cartoon picture of the sink and it's magical.
See, this sort of reminds me of a recent show that I did as far as tackling some of the euphemisms that are used in the disabled community. And one thing I found out recently was a lot of people don't like the term special needs anymore.
Oh, that's like a not.
Right.
It's not the PC term anymore.
Well, from what I read, it's not exactly because of political correctness. The idea being, and I agree with this, but you have to ask yourself, first of all, what makes my needs special? And even if my needs differ from yours, they don't get in the way of what you need.
You are exactly correct in that. We've now all lived in the year plus of the pandemic.
Yes.
And how many grown adults who have some crazy, quirky goodness are now like, oh, wow, I have some sensory issues. Oh, wow, I just was diagnosed with ADHD, or I've been diagnosed with high functioning autism, or I have a sleep disorder, because we've all taken the time and couldn't leave our houses and really had to stop and think about all of these adaptations, accommodations that we have all put into place for ourselves to be successful. It was like looking in a mirror, like all we did was see that I am not successful when my desk is not set up the way I need it and want it. I am not successful when I can't get up from my meeting, go take a 10-minute lap around my office building and come back and then be successful again. Like if I'm stuck at my desk in my house all day long, I'm not being successful. And this is, I think, one of the most silver lining things for many adults that has come out of the pandemic, is that they're recognizing what their special quote unquote accommodations are that make them successful. And they're becoming so much more patient with their own children who have these diagnosed needs because the pediatrician picked it up, their daycare provider picked it up, their general education teacher picked it up, all of this. And their child has all of these needs and maybe has an IEP or all sorts of therapies or accommodations in their house, whatever. And they're like, oh, wow, I'm not that different from my kid, like apple and tree. However, the kid is the tree and the parent is the apple. And they're recognizing like, oh, we're from the same orchard. We're trees right next to each other type of deal. I'm wondering if that piece of the whole pie, when schools fully open up again, when there's more person-to-person communication and not necessarily Zoom communication in the education world that we've kind of had to deal with for the last 18 months, I'm wondering if parents will be more accepting of all the things that they need, other students need, their kids need, and accommodating and willing to support and not afraid or ashamed. Because now they're seeing, oh, wow, I need this just like my kid needs this. I'm not ashamed of myself and I'm proud of myself and I've done all these amazing things for myself and my kid can do those same things. That's my my eensy-weensy silver lining of the fact of I have multiple friends who are like, hey, I was just diagnosed with ADHD. When we're having a conversation, like if there's a subject change, can you just be like, ayo, we're now changing subjects to kind of bring me back to the conversation because I'm only actually listening to 50% of what you're saying. And I'm like, great. This means we can have more effective and efficient conversations.
I'm sorry, what'd you say? No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. That's like zoning off there. Totally fine.
No. I was just thinking that the most often that I see or have seen parents of other people with disabilities has been through sports. And there's a different mentality there as far as if the parents are concerned about it at all, it's just more worry about, oh, my kid's going to get hurt. And it sounds like what you're saying is from an educational standpoint or really just a standpoint of where a lot of people are at in the world, what you see is just more general concern. Not that someone's going to get hurt, but someone won't be accepted or their needs are not going to be met.
So I think I can sum up all of your thoughts. And I say this every single day. I am leading a group of kids, mm-hmm. no matter the age, no matter the ability, is that we are one community. We are one community. And actually, the line leader in the line is the last person in the line, because you are not going to start any activity until that last person is in the classroom and seated. And we are one community. If we need to do this to make sure our one community can be successful, then that's what we're going to do. And that's always the mantra. I mean, I have many mantras of my classroom of my number of job is to keep you safe. So you could do your number of job, which is to learn and have fun. Like that is always what I say. And it's amazing to see my students, well, the ones who I've had in my current school, who are now in fifth grade. And their teachers come to me and they say something about like, so-and-so said something about one community. What is this? And I said, because my role is to make a community and we are one community. We are not the community of Blue Jays and Red Robins and Cardinals or the blue group, the green group, the yellow group. We are one class and we are one community and we are here to support each other. And we don't do things that are going to exclude anyone. Members choose to exclude themselves, that's one thing, but we are not going to do anything that is going to exclude them. It goes the same for the teachers. If you're playing a game and I want to come up and play with you at recess, I hope you're going to adapt the game so that I can play. I can't fit through the teeny tiny tunnel on the playground because I'm a grown adult. Can we change the game so that I can play with you? Because we're one community and I'm part of that community. And so even from the general studies perspective of the world, because that's where I am right now in my teaching career, that's just what we do. My goal for when my students leave my classroom at the end of the year is to be a kind, good person, because being a kind, good person will get you farther in life than having all of the academic knowledge in the world. The best doctors, I mean, you have to know how to like do open heart surgery and all of that, but also have really good bedside manner. And that's being a kind, good person.
It's funny that you keep using the word community because often on the show and really in my personal life too, when talking to other people in wheelchairs specifically, we will refer to the disabled community. And usually what I do is I end these by asking the people I have on that don't have disabilities about misconceptions they might have had about the disabled community. But I think your last point sort of hit home with me in the fact that you don't believe that exists, that we just need to be all one community.
I work at a Jewish day school. We're the Jewish community. We have our moments of inclusivity, I guess you would say, and exclusivity, and we try to like not have those as much as possible type of deal. But the hitting home point is we are one community. And if someone needs a hot meal on a Friday night, guess what? We're opening that door. Someone needs baby clothes because they just moved from somewhere far away and they couldn't ship their boxes. We all just open up our closets and find whatever our kids have grown out of and send them their way. That's just being a community. And again, it's being a kind, good person. And if you are a kind, good person, you can figure out how to navigate the world. You don't have to like everyone and you have to set those boundaries with people, but you can just be a kind, good person and you can be one kind, good community. And it breaks my heart when I hear my little 4, 5, and 6-year-olds tell me about something that they maybe overheard on the news or overheard some neighbor saying or something like that. And they'll say, well, that wasn't very kind. And I'm like, you're right. That wasn't very kind. And my response to them is always, well, how can you fix it? Because you are a kind, good person. So how can you help? And I guess that maybe like brings it back to what you were asking me of what happened way early in life that made you be the person you are today. Like that's, I guess, what I was told from way early in life is like, you're just a kind, good person. And this is what you have to do. And this is what I hope to impart on everyone is that you have to help people cross the street. You have to hold doors for you. My most despised job in classrooms that have jobs is the door holder. Because guess what? When you go to the grocery store, there's no one holding the door for you. You go to the mall, there's no one holding the door for you. You go to Moe's Mexican Grill, there's no one holding the door for you. You have to hold the door and you should hold it for the person behind you because that's kind. and you should pay it forward when you can, because you're never going to know when you fall on hard times. Pay for the person Starbucks behind you, because if you're rolling through Starbucks after a stressful day, probably the person behind you is rolling through Starbucks after a stressful day. If the bottom of the slide is wet at the playground and you have a towel, use the towel and dry it off. No one needs wet pants. Kind, good person. End of story.
To be fair, I know the point you were trying to make, but if you were using a wheelchair, people would fall over themselves trying to open the door for you.
Okay.
That's just been my experience, but...
But let me rewind that one for you. My sweet child gets real annoyed when I tell her not to use the wheelchair button to open the door for herself. And I say, because guess what? Those buttons only have so many pushes in them to open that door. And when someone who can't hold the door open for themselves needs to get through that door, and you've hit the button that last time, and then they're stuck in the rain, how are you going to feel about that? And so I hear what you're saying. I also just want to bring it back to, there's a level of navigating the world so you can be a good, kind person.
To be fair, I don't like to use those buttons unless it's just to see whether they work or not. I think you're onto something as far as them having a finite number of pushes, because a lot of them, either they're turned off or they just don't work.
Right, because so many people push them.
Right.
Or they don't have the right covering, so when it rains or snows, they freeze on the inside. It just happens.
I never really thought about that, but there's a parallel to be made between that and, like, people that don't need them taking handicap spaces and stuff like that.
Exactly. If you can walk the four extra spaces, you should do it. Or you should leave the space next to the handicap space for the person who has the double stroller and they're trying to pick up dinner, because the double stroller deserves to not have to walk those four extra spaces, in my opinion.
Again, you're probably onto something. So this was truly an education with my good friend Emily Hayes. I want to thank her for being on the show this week and thank everybody else for listening. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and join our Discord server. And until next week, this is Nate Lurie saying, you don't always have to do a lot to inspire others.